Belfast is nominated for 7 Oscars, including Best Picture and Best Director for Kenneth Branagh. The film is loosely based on Branagh's own childhood as he came of age during the Troubles in 1969 and 1970. I'm Stephen Thompson, and today we are talking about Belfast on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Joining me today is NPR film critic Bob Mondello. Hey, Bob.
Hey, good to be here.
It's great to have you. Also with us is film critic and culture journalist Badatri D. Chaudhry. Hello, Badatri.
Hi, so good to be back.
It is great to have you here. I'm excited to talk to you both. So Belfast isn't a straight-up dramatization of Kenneth Branagh's own childhood in Northern Ireland during the Troubles, but it's clearly based in part on his own life, in which his working-class Protestant family had to choose whether to stay in a neighborhood rocked by violence between Irish Catholics and Protestant groups. Jude Hill stars as Buddy, a young boy raised mostly by his mother, played by Katrina Balfe. Jamie Dornan plays his father, who's often away on construction work in England, but Buddy also gets plenty of input from his grandparents, played by Judi Dench and Kieran Hines. Shot almost entirely in black and white, the film depicts occasional bursts of civil unrest and violence, but it also spends a fair bit of time reveling in everyday life as Buddy pines for a classmate, watches movies, and gets into minor scrapes around the neighborhood. Of Belfast's 7 Oscar nominations, Branagh is up for 3 himself. He's a producer, as well as the director and screenwriter. Judi Dench and Kieran Hines are up for Best Supporting Actress and Best Supporting Actor, respectively. And it's also nominated for Best Sound and Best Original Song for Van Morrison's Down to Joy, which is one of 9 songs by Morrison to appear in the film. Belfast is in theaters and available for streaming on demand. Bob, I'm going to start with you. What do you think of Belfast?
Well, it was a very nice movie. I wasn't thrilled with it when I saw it, but it's very nice. The thing I like about it is the details. Very early on, there's a sort of a car bombing in the street, and people start throwing stones, and they pick up the stones, and you notice that there's sand under them, right? And Kenneth Branagh has talked about the fact that he didn't realize that the roads were built on sand until the Troubles, and he suddenly saw it. And I thought, that's the kind of detail. It felt so real, right? And I think you wouldn't have noticed it otherwise. He built sections of Belfast on a set. So he basically created all of this. It's not actually filmed there. And I thought it felt real. I mean, that was the thing that I kept on thinking about it was that, okay, that moment, that scene, that alley, that everything just always felt real to me.
Okay. How about you, Badatri?
You know, I'm with Bob. I liked it. I'm not thrilled by it. I think it is a testament to, because it's Branagh, I'll just use this word, to stagecraft, to building this world and building it so beautifully that it's also a triumph of aesthetics. But then, you know, you remind yourself this is what this is about. This is the Troubles. And so I had this little bit of a moral questioning, or, you know, there were 2 angels on each of my shoulders. It's like, oh, this, you know, you're kind of wary of calling something that is so sad and so destructive beautiful. But this film is beautiful.
Yeah, it's very warm.
Yeah.
One of the things about films that are based on a filmmaker's life in some way is that you give them a pass in a lot of respects because they are obviously personal. And Branagh went out of his way to say this was a personal movie.
Yeah.
Now, does that mean that all of his other ones were not?
I mean, it's more personal than Thor.
One hopes. Yes. There's a level at which I don't know whether the audience gives a film the same credit for being personal in that way. I mean, I think it's just a movie to most people. I know more about Branagh. I've been covering him since his first movie, and I'm kind of aware of what he's about and what he did after he left Belfast. And so this sort of gives you keys to how that world might have been shaped. But I, you know, again, I don't really know how it goes over with people who aren't that kind of immersed in his oeuvre.
Yeah, I mean, I had a somewhat similar reaction, I think, that you guys did. I felt that it was very warm, nicely crafted. If you were to name a genre for this movie, it would be Academy Award nominee.
Yes, yes, yeah.
That's like, fair. Yep.
Yes.
This
yep.
film feels like it was greenlit and produced and made and released entirely with the Academy Awards in mind. Mm-hmm. And as such, it feels very middle of the road in the way that it's presenting this story. I mean, I think it is very telling that this film is dedicated to the people who stayed, the people who left, and the people we lost, which is to say absolutely everyone involved.
Everybody.
I mean, you'll take sides to a point, but this movie feels kind of wishy-washy and like by design through a child's eyes in a way that kind of compels it not to take any particularly strong stances. It, I think, works best as a slice of life, as a window into the past, a window into someone's childhood. I agree with you, Bob, that the details in this film are lovely. I collected Matchbox and Hot Wheels cars, and at one point he like takes out the little tray of vintage Matchbox cars, and I'm like, oh, I want that, I want that, I want that, I want that.
No, and even like, you know, it's not even about cars. Even when Ma is like sitting and peeling potatoes, it's just so beautiful, and the details, you're like, I want potatoes for dinner as well.
This film really turned me around on potatoes. How well did you guys think that this movie kind of struck that balance? Because you have life and death stakes, but you also have those details in the everyday. Like, did the balance of stakes work for you guys?
Sure. I wasn't looking at it that way. I was really, I guess I decided early on in watching the movie that it wasn't going to be about the plot, really. I mean, it to some extent, it is about whether the family is going to leave or not. And after a little while, I was watching the performances. I was watching Judi Dench, for instance, doing gorgeous things in with absolutely nothing. Or Kieran Hines singing How to Handle a Woman.
Mark me well, I will tell you, sir, the way to handle a woman is to love her.
Yeah, that's about right. That would have opened a couple of years earlier. That's Camelot. So I was kind of entranced with that kind of thing. I went to a screening of this movie that Branagh was present at and that he talked about afterwards, working with those actors. And he talked about filming the last scene where Judi Dench, she says her line, and he thinks, oh my God, she's so great. And then they go to look at the footage, and there's this noise in the footage as she says the line. And he's looking around like, I can't believe somebody ruined this shot. And somebody says, that was you. You gasped. He wrecked the shot. I thought that was nice.
I was also reading Judi Dench saying that how very difficult it was for her to do the accent, to do the Northern Irish accent. And I was like, wow, there are things in this world that even Judi Dench finds hard. You know?
I mean, I think when Judi Dench was nominated for an Oscar, there was a certain measure of surprise, I think, from a lot of observers. I think a lot of people thought that if any performance from this film were going to be nominated for supporting actress, it would have been Katrina Balfe and not Judi Dench. Do you feel like that was a deserving nomination?
I do. I think she's superb in it. I Oscars don't mean the same things to me that I guess they do to the general public. I don't care. You know, I saw 20 performances this year that were every bit as good as every performance in this film. Something's going to win best actor and actress and supporting actor and supporting actress. If it's these two performances, great. If it isn't, okay. I think she does a beautiful job. I wasn't surprised that the two leads, the parents, were not nominated. And I thought, yeah, they're gorgeous in the film, but they're doing it the way Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward would have done it, right? I mean, they are movie stars, because what child doesn't see his parents as movie stars?
Yeah.
So they're beautiful. They're just gorgeous to watch. And they're idealized in that way. And that isn't necessarily something that Oscar is going to reward. Whereas the grandparents are idealized in a different sense. They're kind of cranky and interestingly engaging. So that's, I think, the nominations went where they should.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm also like, disclaimer, I'm the kind of person who'll pay to watch Judi Dench just sitting on a bench and watch paint dry on a wall. So I will take whatever little or lot of what you give me of her. But also, like Bob said, that she's working with so little in the film. Like, she doesn't have much screen time. She doesn't have much dialogue. But there's such deep layering. And, you know, My grandmother is someone who had to leave her country as well. And just that idea of what you call home, and you know that's home, but and you also know it's not safe for your children. That's such a contradictory layered thing. And then that last scene Bob talks about, it all comes out. It's so beautiful. So yeah, I think she deserves everything she gets. Yes. And more.
I mean, I really came away from this film adoring that performance by Kieran Hines.
Yeah.
And that performance really gets an assist from Branagh's screenplay in a way that I think no other performance in this film quite gets at. He's not just acting, he's not just conveying the dialogue that the grandpa character is conveying, but he's conveying an entire personality. Like, I think everybody has that relative who's just got a salty little twist on everything. To me, that performance had real layering to it that just really stuck with me more than I think anything else in the film.
I agree with you, absolutely.
Okay, so Belfast is the latest in a long, long line of movies where you see like a serious historical moment through the eyes of a child. How did that trope work for you here?
I was reminded of Derry Girls, the TV series, yeah, which is also set in Northern Ireland. And I can't put a finger on it, and maybe you guys can help me name it. The characters by themselves were so spunky and so sassy by themselves. So, you know, you could kind of buy into that, oh, these kids are doing kid-like things in a very uncomfortable, non-quote-unquote normal environment. But there's something about this film where, you know, the family is so perfect within its own little bubble. I know, of course, they have like money problems, this and that, but they just seem like, and I don't know how better to say this, but they seem like an implant within something grave and serious that's going around. And I don't know if I wanted to see more of the characters or like, you know, character development like they did in Derry Girls, and which is, again, probably an unfair comparison because that's a TV series, so they had more time.
In a different era.
In a different era, yes. I wanted to, I mean, I'm not saying I wanted more sass or something, but like definitely more about who these people are.
I'm not sure I felt that way about it. I was with you until you said the last line there. I felt as if I got who the people are, their relation to what was going on, it was what felt tenuous to me. They needed to leave because there was this threatening guy in the neighborhood, almost more than because of what was going on in society at that moment. I've been talking about how much of it works. The confrontation scene with the soldiers and the bad guy and the dad all in one place,
yeah,
that didn't work. That's not how that would play,
yeah,
right? I guess what I wanted was for it to be better integrated.
Yes, I think that's what I meant. Like that whole implant thing that I was talking about, they just look a little removed. Like you said, you know, it looks like they're being threatened by a guy in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm.
Well, I do think some of that is the product of the fact that it's not just presenting the story through the eyes of a child, but this is a lot of this is from Kenneth Branagh's childhood memories. Mm-hmm. And so his memories of it are those of a child. And so the story almost can't help but be told that way in a way that can be a little bit flattening. Because the stakes feel more like I'm not going to be around the girl I like, more than obviously kind of the life and death we might have to get out of here for our safety. I mean, it is pitching a lot of nostalgia for events taking place 50 years ago.
Right.
I mean, right up to and including the wall-to-wall Van Morrison songs on the soundtrack. Like, this is evoking nostalgia for a time period shortly before I was born, and I am elderly.
You are so not elderly. Well, listen, that's the story of Oscar periods throughout all of history. West Side Story is another example of that, where you're looking at something that is nostalgic in a way about an era and that audiences have not taken to it. I'm guessing that if the older audience were going to movies in theaters as opposed to watching them at home, that Belfast and West Side Story and a couple of the other ones that are up for even Licorice Pizza would be doing better.
I was going to say Licorice Pizza too.
Right. Those films would be doing better at the box office.
Hmm.
And I think it's unfortunate that they're not. It's impossible for there to be an Oscar bounce in the middle of a pandemic. It's you don't get that.
it depends somewhat on when those films are released on streaming, because there is a whole second life awaiting all three of those movies.
Right. I tend to discount that. You're right. That's fair.
I also think that there's always this danger when an adult retrospectively makes a film, quote unquote, seeing like a child. You know, there's always like this, it's my nostalgia. This is how I remembered things. Somebody staying across from the road from Buddy would have probably had a very different childhood. So if that person has grown up and is watching this film, it's like, oh no, that's not my childhood. So there's always that danger of seeing like a child as an adult and wanting other adults to see it with you.
And despite that, I think Branagh did a pretty good job of making this persuasive. But again, what we keep on coming back to is, it's lovely. It's very nice. I hesitate to say too nice, but it's a film that seems crafted to not offend about a period that could only offend.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I, for one, would like to dedicate this episode to the people who liked Belfast, the people who didn't like Belfast, and the people who didn't see Belfast.
That works.
We want to know what you think about Belfast. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Thanks so much to both of you for being here.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, and we will see you all tomorrow.